get in serious trouble for copyright infringement.
You got an organ going.
Yes? Copyright is not doing crap!
Copyright? What's copyright?
It's the right of the owners to control.
Right? You know what time it is.
Welcome to
the copyright
experiment.
The copyright experiment! What's up? You're listening to CITR 101.9. This is the copyright experiment with DJ Mochi and Autonomy. We got a fun show tonight, some neat discussions to have, and a good lineup of tunes.
You want to turn my mic on?
I do want to turn your mic on. Are you on mic 2 or mic 3?
3.
Okay.
Hello.
And that's Autonomy. Alrighty. So, what are we talking tonight about tonight that's so exciting?
Well, I guess you could say it's exciting. No, it's exciting.
I think it's exciting.
Today, we're talking about an article today that we read recently that we found. It's a very polarizing article. Basically summarizing the modern music industry and everything that's good about it, everything that's bad about it. And basically, it's trying to dispel a lot of the optimistic myths about the music industry now. And it's called The 13 Most Insidious Pervasive Lies of the Modern Music Industry. So, yeah, that's a title.
Yeah, pretty heavy-handed and, yeah, I guess pretty focused on digital effects of, or like,
yeah,
effects,
I mean,
of digital.
That is the modern music industry.
Modern, digital, interchangeable, I guess.
Yeah, at this point.
So, the first lie is...
Yeah, so we're going to go
lies,
through the lies in here and give our take on it.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's less of an attack on just this article, more just about, you know, how it speaks to the music industry in general and our thoughts on it. So it's good, kind of like a summary show.
Yeah. So, quote, lie one, great music will naturally find its audience. And they say that the greatest artists will basically find their audiences naturally thanks to the social media and the internet. And then what they say in response to that in the article is that just like in the old days, great music often gets left behind. It doesn't get recognized because it's not supported financially, or it doesn't follow the, you know, the mainstream trends or whatever. And that the major labels sort of control a lot of that.
Yeah, as they say, like the a lot of the music still gets left behind in obscurity, and the ones you're going to listen to are the ones that are financially backed and marketed, rather than the ones that just find the ones that are, you know, considered quality but don't find their audience.
Yeah, and I think this is to some degree true, but I'm not sure. I think that's a bit judgmental of listeners in general, because not everyone wants to not everyone wants to take the time and find good music. Some people don't really care that much about music. They just, you know, okay, I'll just turn the radio, whatever, it's fine. And there's people like Tim and I that we're DJs, we spend a lot of our time looking for music, and we do, at least I'd like to think, we find music that doesn't, you know, follow the mainstream radars, and that's part of our, I guess, our role. And I think that there are people like that that, you know, come from various backgrounds, and that creates a wide range of things that exist, and people share these things on social media outlets, on Facebook, I see often on Tumblr, on SoundCloud. You know, there are ways it gets out if you're just looking.
My kind of take on this one is that it has a very narrow-minded scope of what quality music is.
Yeah.
The lie being that, you know, quality music isn't going to get to where it should be. You know, it's the same old shit. And you know, that's just basically saying that mainstream music is inherently not quality. And that's kind of, you know, quality is an entirely subjective term, despite what people may want to tell you. So the quality of the music that you listen to is going to be what you like to listen to. And, you know, it's not true that the more people listen to it, the higher quality it is, but it's not true at all to say that the music that gets most listened to isn't quality, and the stuff that, you know, only, like, the true heads are going to listen to that real good quality music.
Yeah, I mean, that's just pretentious.
Yeah, it's pretentious, and There are obviously lots of reasons why quality music might not reach the audience that it should, but to call the mainstream music not low quality is it's a bit of a disservice to music listeners, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there was that Lorde single. I absolutely love it. And it's like, what? It's on the Billboard charts, number one or something like that. I don't know, but I think it's great. I thought it was great a long time before it got on there. Not to say that, you know, like as a hipster or anything, but I don't really care that it's on number one now. I think that's great for her.
Yeah, quality isn't really very isomorphic to how popular it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
Okay, the second lie. Would you read that for us, Tim?
The second lie is, the music landscape would be increasingly dominated by smaller and smaller artists with smaller but stronger audiences, and they can make more money because they're directly communicating with their fans. That is a lie of the music industry, apparently. And the truth of the matter is, according to these guys, is instead of unleashing a torrent of successful niches, the internet has actually made blockbusters even bigger than before. And the rest of the starving artists that are in the tail of that storm are still starving.
This one's tricky because I don't know where the basis of it comes from, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be very leading in its lie. It's obviously people are very optimistic about the idea of musicians directly communicating with their fans. And obviously we are very aware of that, and we get most of our music from direct fan interactions from artists.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the lie in this one, or what I don't really like about it, is that it's basically they're saying that big money is still in, like, the, you have to be like a really big artist and you have to kind of generate all that revenue to make it really in the music industry. Yeah. But, you know, people aren't really making money or making music directly for the money, right?
I mean, exactly.
There's a business, but it's not, you know, it's not the main motivator.
Yeah, being, you know, when it says increasingly dominated by, and then when they talk about the musical landscape, and then they talk about making more money as if that's kind of the same thing. But they're different things to me. You know, I think making money can be a part of it, but there are artists like Vincent Parker that we had on the other week most of his music is free, and that's how he wants it to be. And,
mm-hmm.
But he's, you know, doing pretty well in the electronic music scene.
Yeah, the people that make niche content, they're not doing it because now they have an audience they can speak to, and now they can make their money in the niche that has been untapped by major labels. But they're doing it because they love it, and the money is secondary.
Yeah, and now there's better distribution platforms even to get that to people, whereas, you know, before it might have stayed as something that just was with their close friends or something.
Yeah, and I think this is just a case of mistaking a business model with a music model.
Yeah. The next one is the death of a major label, if it happened, would make it easier for artists to succeed. What they say is that basically this isn't happening, and that only a few small music curators are looking at this, like, stuff outside the major labels.
There's the major labels have been, you know, they are more successful than ever, and we've seen statistics on this too, that in the last 10 years music revenue for the industry in total has actually increased significantly, and by about 50%, I think, in the last 10 years, the entertainment revenue has gone up, which is pretty incredible considering it was something that the internet was this beast that the RIAA and the MPAA were, like, scared out of their pants about.
Yeah. So, you know, they're doing all right, which makes it kind of a funny lie anyways. But besides that, it seems, and this is just sort of a subjective thing I'm saying, but it seems like a lot of my friends, people I know, are more interested in looking at things outside the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that most music is tuned out except for a few small trusted curators.
yeah, there's this, I think this is what this is trying to say, is that because the major label isn't holding back the floodgates of, you know, wannabe artists, that the ones who aren't signed to major labels can actually still make it now.
Okay,
and
yeah.
And we're not really seeing that. We're not seeing, like, tons of, you know, we're not seeing the charts dominated by people not on major labels. They are still on major labels because, you know, the artists that people want to hear, those that, like, millions and millions of mass populations want to hear, are still getting signed to major labels. But it doesn't mean that the artists that are communicating to a smaller audience aren't thriving as well. They're just kind of thriving in their own way. I think music, like, subgenre cultures have been thriving more than ever. It's mm-hmm. just not, you know, it's not making it onto the mainstream because it's inherently not mainstream.
Right? Yeah.
It's designed to be on the left field, right?
Yeah, and it's not making as much money because that's not as much their goal. So, you know, it's kind of like, what are you getting into it for?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have big companies to try and make you profit, then you're not going to make as much profit. That's fine. And the next slide, which is kind of tied to this, is that there will be a major label. We kind of just talked about that. Or sorry, there will be the death of a major label, which they say is a lie. And I pretty much agree. The major labels seem to be doing fine. From that statistic we just had, you know, their profits were up $20 billion in the last 5 years, or from 2005 to 10.
Industry.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's.
The major labels were reluctant to embrace the new distribution models, but they've found ways that they can capitalize on it now, and
yeah.
They're happy with that.
Yeah. The fifth lie is that digital formats will produce far greater revenues than physical ones. So the absence of major manufacturing, overhead shipping, and all that kind of stuff will make it so they can basically make more money without having to spend. But what this article says the truth is that digital sale volumes are lower, but also there's a lot of, basically there's, you know, you get like very, very small royalties and the per item payouts are much lower.
Yeah, I think initially this lie may have that digital formats would produce greater revenues was originally thought, like when you were conflating like album sales with digital sales, if you're saying like, oh yeah, if you're paying $15-$20 for your CD, you should be paying $15-$20 for a digital download.
Yeah.
But, you know, the free market has kind of driven down
exactly
the cost to the consumer, and that's just a natural thing, right? When you don't have the overhead, there's going to be always someone who's going to undercut you mm-hmm. for a slightly less profit just so they can get more customers. And so we've seen now that the cost of digital downloads are a lot cheaper than they once were. And especially with albums, and you know, sometimes even free.
Yeah.
And so it's not really an issue. It's not really, nobody's really even saying like that, you know, digital sales are going to bring in the cash, because as we'll talk about a little later too, that might be even the total opposite.
Yeah, and what they say here, and what I think sounds true and makes sense, is that physical vinyls and CDs make more money. And I think that that sounds about right. And there's still a market for that, which I think we'll talk about later as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next lie is that the real money is in touring.
This is something that gets touted quite a bit lately.
Yeah. You know, if artists can just give away their music for free and let it, you know, just kind of flow around, then when they get on the road, they'll pick that all back up. You know, they'll reap the rewards of all their music that they gave away for free.
And this is actually something that Dr. Cross was talking about last week, how mm-hmm. there's models for indie musicians now where they give music away for free and, you know, make the money they need to live on tour.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, I don't know personally, but it seems like that's doable, and it's still tough. I mean, making music has always been tough. But I think that it's in some ways maybe even more possible because you can get to more fans, you know?
You know, you can actually let your fans know a lot easier that you're coming to town.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, live music revenue has increased as well.
Really?
In the last,
I didn't know that.
Years because, more people are doing it, right?
Yeah.
More people are able to do it because they can tell their fans directly that they're coming to their city. Their fans can demand it immediately. There's more and more lightweight kind of tours now going on, especially with the rise of like DJ culture, where you know, it's only one person that needs to tour, and they don't have to take like huge boxes full of their gear with them.
Yeah, so I think this lie is actually kind of true.
Yeah, I mean, there is money in touring. I do think that you need to reach a certain level before you can even think about touring.
Yeah, and to say real money, okay, what does that mean? Are you looking for six figures? Probably not going to happen right away.
Yeah.
Speaking of six figures, the next lie is there's an emerging middle class artist. So that's kind of a vague term. What that means is that there'll be not outrageous superstars or people that are just scraping by, but people who are just, you know, good enough and can support their families and pay their bills and just kind of, you know, get by comfortably without being big.
And that would be enabled by, you know, direct to fan distribution and stuff.
Yeah.
Like discovery. I think this one is kind of, I don't know who's been thinking this lie, but it doesn't seem like it would be realistic ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm speaking in retrospect a bit, I guess, but because making music and, you know, getting paid to make music is always going to be skewed to more supply than demand. There's always going to be people who want to make music, and there's always going to be people who want to get paid to make music, and there's always going to be more people than the market is demanding for. And so that just means inherently that there's going to be a lot more people that are struggling and trying to make it, because
yeah,
there's just no demand for that many people to make music.
Yeah. So I agree that this is a lie, I guess, as well.
The lie is a lie.
And what's lie eight?
Lie eight, that Kickstarter can and will build careers. Yeah, that basically that super fans will come out and support their artists and enable them to work and do their craft and everything. And this one actually I think is a little more spot on, because there's the truth is, according to this article, and I would have to agree with it, that there are musicians who have, you know, put out Kickstarters, who have put out crowdfunding options to support themselves, people like Amanda Palmer and stuff like that. But it's Kickstarter is one of those funny things that you can't, initially when it came out, people thought like, oh, you know what, if I just put this thing up, then people will support me and I can do it. And it's not really that simple. You know, yeah. It's all about your ideas, right? And Kickstarter absolutely can build careers, but great ideas are hard to come by. And that's really what's going to build your career, whether you fund it through Kickstarter or whether you fund it through some other channel.
Yeah, and not only that, but you have to get the idea heard by enough people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get your music heard by enough people that people think it's...
You kind of need a tipping point of enough people to actually buy into your product.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd say that's kind of a lie as well.
Well, I mean, I think I would be inclined to agree with this one, because it's true that, you know, Kickstarter isn't this magical tool that's going to build your fan base or allow you to enable you to do what should be done.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a bit naive, really. I mean, you're not just going to make your...
Well, it's kind of a technological utopianism, right?
Yeah.
And it's very easy to buy into that, I think, which is, you know, the point of this article.
I mean, that's how Kickstarter makes their thing, you know, is by selling people that idea, that hope.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So.
The next lie is Spotify is your friend. Streaming on Spotify will make you money, and if you just wait long enough, you'll collect that. There
Spotify
you go.
Spotify is basically the new way to make money with your music, supposedly.
And the truth is that Spotify will make Spotify and Wall Street lots of money, if they're lucky, and a little bit for major labels, but not so much for the artists.
And this one, I think, is kind of true, kind of not. It is the lie that Spotify is your friend. Spotify is not really the friend of artists. But Spotify also isn't making a ton of money. The only thing Spotify is good at is sending internet streaming royalties to major labels who then maybe sometimes it trickles down to artists. But the problem is, right now the way it's structured with most labels is that streaming revenue, streaming royalties is a significantly lower percentage than digital download royalties to artists. So artists really aren't seeing a whole lot of the money from royalties from internet streaming.
Mm-hmm.
But major labels are, because they have the leverage to, you know, put pressure on the Spotify's, the Netflix's, the Rhapsody's, whatever, to actually pull money out of them. And Spotify hasn't really made any money since they started. They're getting lots of revenue, but they're not turning a profit because their overhead is so high with royalty costs.
Yeah, so I guess that Spotify will make Spotify and Wall Street tons of money is maybe not quite true, but
no,
for the labels, it seems like they are making money.
Yeah, and I think that may change because, you know, eventually artists are going to demand that they get a more respectable cut from their online streaming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not happening right now.
Yeah. The next lie is that Google and YouTube are your friends, and that, I mean, basically that they have some other things in mind other than their own money, which I don't think is true.
Well, YouTube does have, like, ways to monetize. Remember we were talking about Bauer way back in, like, the
That's
third
true.
Week, how, you know, Matt Deason was making money because YouTube has algorithms to pick up which songs are playing in videos and send royalties for those.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they do have payment structures set up. But again, it kind of goes back to the Spotify thing as well. I mean, if you think you're going to make it big through streaming, you're dreaming at this point. Because really what it's doing is it's serving, as we talked about on the Bauer show, that people making money off this are YouTube and Google and the advertisers that pay for it because they get see it, the labels who get the streaming, but not really, as in Bauer's case, he's not really making that much money off the streaming of that song.
Yeah, and stuff like that is hard to come by, you know, to catch onto a meme like that. I mean, that's one in a million.
And I think the thing you have to realize is that the YouTube isn't really a good revenue model, but it is a great exposure model.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of just have to know the tools you're using and what they're useful for. So YouTube is going to be great if you want to get your music out there, hopefully. But not so good if you're trying to make money. But I think that most artists know that by now.
Yeah, and the article does say this exactly, and I think they're spot on with that.
Mm-hmm.
The 11th lie is that if Pandora could just lower the royalties and they would survive, and then they'd be able to help the artists with their survival, I guess, somehow.
This is kind of a weird one. The co-founder of Pandora recently appealed to artists to try and to reduce the to tell Congress in the U.S. to reduce the amount of money required to pay out for online streaming royalties. But they're basically asking artists to reduce the amount of money that they get in effect.
Yeah.
And the problem in the streaming model lies in the fact that the labels who own the copyright on these streaming tracks have unfair contracts with their artists to get, like, basically over 90% of the revenue from royalties on internet streaming.
Yeah, and so this is pretty much a lie, it seems like, to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, until they change the cut on the label side of things, Pandora changing things is not really going to do much for the artists.
Mm-hmm.
The next lie is t-shirts, that all the merch sales are going to make it for artists, which I don't know where this lie comes from. I've never heard that. I mean, it's t-shirts are kind of just like, they're neat, but they don't really make money.
Yeah, I mean, I think nobody's relying on t-shirts, I think is what Jeff is trying to say here. Obviously it's another revenue stream, and major labels know this because they have contracts now that get cuts of everything that the artist does, everything from touring to t-shirts to CD sales. But nobody's really paying their rent with t-shirt sales, that's for sure.
But, I mean, on the flip side, I guess it does contribute if you look at it, you know, in combination with doing a show and maybe getting a few pay-what-you-want downloads for money and getting some merchandise, you know, it all kind of adds up. And if you're a struggling artist, those little bits can be what makes you keep doing this or you stop.
Yeah.
As an artist.
Yeah, I mean, it all goes back to you as the artist and the quality of the music that you're putting out, right? If it's something that people want to listen to, then they're also going to buy the merch. But you're not just going to make money off merch because you made it.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of output already.
The last and final lie.
Yeah, streaming is the future. And that access to whatever music via streaming will make everything, it'll fix everything, it'll kind of naturally select.
It'll the music balance industry. Out the upending of the music industry in the
yeah.
digital age. And, you know, I do think that streaming is going to be a really important part of the future of music. And it's already starting to become an important part, but there, as we've been talking about on this show, that just this in the last half hour here, that, there's still a lot of kinks that need to be worked out with it.
Yeah. And money wise, it's not figured itself out.
No,
but as
a convenient method for fans to listen to the music they want, it's pretty great right now.
Yeah. I mean, I personally love it for, you know, being at work. I could just stream things off of RDO or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, you know, for artists making money, for the company staying afloat, it doesn't seem like it's working that well.
But, you know, I think that will balance out, hopefully.
Yeah, people figure it out, and that's part of the selection process of developing new technologies as well.
Yeah, the question is whether, you know, these platforms are actually going to make it.
Yeah.
Because as we were talking about, Spotify hasn't turned a profit, Pandora hasn't really turned a profit recently.
Yeah.
So how these things are going to balance out is another story, and whether, for example, major labels or something will step in with their own distribution platform. That may happen, but
yeah. So I think that the streaming as it is won't be the future, but some kind of streaming could very well be the future in some sense. I mean
it has to be, really.
Yeah.
So that about wraps up the article today.
Yeah, if you want to check out the article, it's on digitalmusicnews.com, and it's called the 13 pervasive lies of the modern music industry.
Insidious.
Oh, yeah. I forgot lies. That. Insidious and pervasive. My goodness.
Yeah.
That's some intense lies. What is not a lie? I don't even want to start with that. You're listening to CITI 101.9. This is the Copyright Experiment. We're going to play you an ad or two, and we'll get right back to you with some tunes. A little mix from Autonomy. Hope you enjoy.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the Food Bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
And you are listening to CITR 101.9. You're back with the Copyright Experiment. We're going to start off with a mix here, or continue with a mix here from Autonomy. And the first song is Jet Blue Jet feat. Landslide, GTA, Raz and Biggie, and this is the Trop Killers remix. You can download this song and all the songs we play on our blog at copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. Enjoy.
Change positions.
This the last track was Echo Positions. It's a little Aaliyah remix. Coming up here is a remix by me of Diplo and DJ Fresh's Up. A little house remix.
All up in my back trying to take my track. So strong, so many hot girls. I need your warm, the taste of your mouth, girl. I need your warm, good food and love. I need your warm. This hit was made before we were born. A dreamer, so I'ma keep dreaming on. It's kinda like a break of the chin and been born. You got is gone. Yeah, I like such and such a lot, but the feeling's not as strong. We were like two birds, never able to fly. I try to pick the right words to say to the sky. Some days I'm driving, wasn't able to cry. I've never been good at saying goodbye. I take a deep breath when the times is hard. When I reminisce over you, my God. I spent many years trying to be the heartthrob. I guess it's only right that I got my heart robbed. Send a room that reminds me of you. A hint of perfume that reminds me of you. Take a look at the moon that reminds me of you. Hope the stars and the gods align me with you. I'm not afraid to
This is Basement's Up In It. It's Basement with no vowels. Before that, we heard I Want You by Common, K Trinidad's remix. This is a Terraki on the remix of Miami Sphere by Lorna Dune, released via Accelerator's MP3 blog. This is, of course, Jam City for those of you that know him. Track released for free, believe it or not, called Bells. Before that was Single Point Edge by Aporia. Really neat techno track. And you're listening to the Copyright Experiment here on 101.9, and we'll be right back after a brief announcement.
With the vast amount of changes happening in the world, it's almost impossible to get a clear picture of what's really going on.
We are trapped within the logic of capitalism, leaving us unable to imagine what comes next.
The Extra Environmentalist brings the perspectives of people who can see the whole picture and are ready for whatever comes our way.
Tune in to the Extra Environmentalist every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
This is the viewpoint that makes all places the same to you.
That sounds actually pretty interesting. I think I might check that out. You are back with the Copyright Experiment, getting back into the mix. What you just heard before that was Cosmos Midnight, a track called Phantasm. And after that was Matic 808 and Bryn Mawr with their track High Art. Coming in now is a Canadian group, Night Raiders, with their track Fall in Love. Actually, believe it or not, a Royals bootleg song, Royals by Lord. This is Sabota on the bootleg of that. That's about it for us. Next up, we have Pierre with Aural Tentacles. Have a good night. And yes, you're listening to CITR 101.9.